The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hi, I'm Chris Difford. Welcome to I Never Thought It Would Happen, a podcast for the wonderful charity Help Musicians. Joining me on this episode is a man who's been away from the music scene for a long time. In fact, it's been 8 years since his last album, which was a record of covers, but a whopping 11 years since he released material that he's written. He came to national attention in 2002 through the TV show Fame Academy, but more importantly, he became a star because of his remarkable voice. He's had a string of top 10 singles, he's sold millions of albums, and won a bunch of awards. Please welcome Lamar. Hey Lamar, it's a privilege to have you here on I Never Thought It Would Happen, which is a podcast for Help Musicians. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good.
Where are you in the world?
Currently at home. We're just launching, the music video for one of my songs today. So I've been kind of like dealing with that whole upload and online thing this morning. And then I get to do this as well with you. So cool.
A music video, something you enjoy doing?
Do you know what? This time around, this release is on my own label. So there's a lot of more work. There's a bigger team, but all say is down to me, and all creation and everything is literally down to me. So it is a very fulfilling process. A lot more hard work, but much more fulfilling.
It must be great to have your own label and know where your own destiny is going to go.
Yeah, I think so. I think in about a month's time, I'll be able to answer that more concisely. But right now, it just feels like a lot of work. But like you say, nothing worth having ever came easy. So, yeah.
That's true enough, yeah. When you were at school, did you have music lessons? Was that something that you had in your school?
Not really. Do you know, I grew up, I'm from, Nigerian heritage. So my parents are both Nigerian, mum and dad. And the focus in most African families, especially in the, late 70s, early 80s, is study. You're going to be a doctor, you're going to be a lawyer, you're going to be some kind of thing that brings respect to the name, So I wanted to be a doctor. That's what I wanted to be. Later, I changed that to pharmacy. So I was in college kind of like trying to study towards being a pharmacist. Music was just like a side thing. I loved watching The Box that came out back in the day, The Box, MTV's thing. Yeah. So I used to love watching that, singing along in the living room. My parents were very religious as well, so church was a big feature. And I was the youngest, so that meant that I'd have to go around with my mum, who was the kind of like the head of the religious aspect of the household. And I'd have to go along with her every Sunday, sometimes Wednesday, sometimes a Saturday as well. And, play keys or sing or help her out in the church. So I was always around music in that way.
Wow. And what sort of music were they listening to apart from church music?
Well, gospel. Do you know what? Growing up, I remember in the household, there was a lot of, I remember Boney M being on there. Michael Jackson. Yeah, randomly. Michael Jackson. Who else was there? Marvin Gaye, Sam Cooke, Gladys Knight. Loads of soulful artists. Al Green, James Brown. That has been played in the house a lot, but also a lot of gospel music.
Can you remember when music touched you emotionally and made you cry? I remember the first time I cried when I heard a Carole King song, and it was like, wow, I didn't realise music could be so moving.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you know what? I don't know about the first time, but I know that, you know, gospel music is very moving anyway. So
it is, yeah.
When I was younger, it was Catholic churches. But then as I got to early teens, you know, my mum was going to a lot of evangelical type churches. So there's, you know, there's a lot more emotion involved in those churches. So, you know, I'd say that's the time I started realizing that separate to religion, just music on its own is a real force of nature. It's always kind of baffled me how sound, because really it's just the waves going through the air, how that can really draw so much emotion out of a person. But yeah, I remember even like looking at movies. My mom used to like watching a lot of black and white movies, or just movies that had music in them in general. And yeah, quite often I'd be moved to tears, or to that, not higher place, but that other place where you're kind of lost in music, you know? So I think vocals and voice and, you know, melody has always affected me in that way, yeah.
You have an incredible voice, Lamar, and I'd love to hear you sing a gospel record. I'm sure it would lift people.
Ah, that would be something. A little gospel album, or just a gospel song, maybe one day.
Yeah. So you've been off track now for, is it 11 years you've been away from the music industry, I guess?
Yeah, so I think in 2015, I released an album, but it was an album of covers, just soulful covers of kind of like musicians that had influenced me. I did that with Larry Klein, so we did some music. But
oh, you did it with Larry Klein?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I really love nice Larry dude, Klein.
Really nice guy.
Yeah, really lovely guy.
Yeah, really nice guy. So, you know, we did, the whole album was with him, and we chose the covers together. And yeah, that was just a lovely process. But original material, it's been 11 years. Yeah, so I think 11 years ago, I did my album Invincible. That was on my own label, but done in a different way. Mm-hmm. This one is very much behind the scenes, even more of an independent thing, which has its positives, yeah.
In that time, where did you go emotionally?
So all places, I guess, because, you know, over 11 years, you can imagine there's a lot of happy times. There's some down times as well. Mm-hmm. And back in the day when I was recording the albums for Sony, I did 5 albums with them, and every album was done year after year. It became much more of a conveyor belt way of releasing music. It was very exciting. I enjoyed it, but you can lead to burnout because I was in, you know, 95% of the sessions, you know, so I was co-writing. So, yeah. You know, I do 80 songs a year and then pick 12 and then another 80 and pick 12, another 80. After a while, you can get burnt out when you put in promotion and the rest of it as well. But with this album, most of it, I didn't really know I was recording an album. What I was doing was I was writing for other artists, and I was writing for, you know, for TV, for movies, etc. And every so often I'd stumble across a song or a lyric, and I think that one's for me. It doesn't really fit in with anyone. It sounds very much authentically Lamar. So I'd put it to one side and then just keep on. And then I think last year, the whole COVID period had happened. I thought, this year's 20 years. I'd like to release some new music, but I don't want to give something to the fans and not, you know, as in I don't want to say to the fans to come out and celebrate and then and not have given them something new, because that's been one resounding question over the 11 years is, when's the new material? We always know you're writing, but where's the new material? And I haven't always been in a position to give them that. So yeah, so I thought, you know what, this will be a good year to put it all together into a package. So last year I reached out to Matthias Wallow, someone who's I've worked with on my previous albums, and I said, look, have you got any more music to, you know, to send over, send me over some tracks? And I listened to a few and I picked a handful, and I wrote to them over the course of about 6 or 7 months, and I added them to the other tracks so I thought were, you know, were still outstanding and were for me, and there's the album.
Yeah. Do you find music very therapeutic? Is it like having a counselor in the room?
Definitely. 100%. You know, it really is a release. You know, at times I felt, yeah, I don't feel like doing this anymore. But no matter what you do, especially when it's been an intrinsic part of your life for so long, whether it be, as I said earlier, in church or later on my bread and butter, it's kind of like when a footballer, I don't know, a striker finishes their career, as much as they'd like to stop, they need to get back on that pitch, because that scoring that goal, it's a big rush, you know? Yeah. And for me, writing the song is one thing. That is therapy for me. But getting it out there and knowing that it's touched other people and then hearing them come back years later and say, oh, do you know what? I used to listen to that with my son who's no longer here, or my dad used to love that one. So, you know, he's gone, but we played that at his funeral, or we got married to your song, or that was the first song my baby heard after it was born. We wanted to play it in the room. Those kind of messages, it's like, wow, it takes it to a whole other level.
Yeah. And did all of that sort of therapeutic angle of songwriting, did that really help you when you lost your mum? I know that when I lost mine, the only way I could express my feelings was to get a pen and start writing lyrics.
Mm, yeah. You know, for me, I addressed my mother's passing about 4 or 5 years after the event.
Yeah.
When my mum passed, it was it was like the week before I released my first single. So I was...
Yeah.
Like full on promotion at the time. And I'm, you know, she pulled me to one side and she was like, do you know, I really, please, no matter what happens, you know, I'm happy moving on to wherever it is that I'm going to go, knowing that my last child at least has also got his opportunity and is, you know, in a positive place, you know? So she said, look, so make sure you don't let go of that. Put your head down and just make it work kind of thing. So I was very much in that headspace of not trying to let her down, but just thinking, I've got to make the most of this situation and I really want to do right by her, you know? So I don't think I really gave myself the chance to address that situation or that whole feeling until years later when, you know, it interrupted things itself. And then I was forced to kind of address it and mourn properly. And that was an interesting process. But eventually, I think it did, like I say, it did start creeping into my writing and angle of songwriting, yeah.
Yeah. During lockdown, during the COVID period, I got to work with Help Musicians. And it's a wonderful charity that helps people that have had dark moments and, you know, can't find their feet, possibly. Has there been anything like that you may have used earlier on in your career, were the people that you could turn to and say, you know what, I feel like I need to lean on you?
Yeah, definitely. I think I've been very fortunate, you know, prior to kind of like the public part of my career, there was a good 8 years or so of me trying to do music, going up and down the country, touring, performing, and I was with a production company called Best Kept Secret. So I kind of like grew a strong brotherhood with those guys there, and I was, when I then signed to Sony years later, I you know, kept one on as a tour manager and one on as kind of like an advisor. So a lot of what I was doing was still in conjunction with the people that I'd known since I was 17, and I still know some of them are still part of my team. So I think in that, I've always had a kind of a backbone or an honest voice in there, and a voice that cares solely about me. You know, sometimes you can get into, not sometimes, most times you get into the music business, and as much as people care, it is about making money. It is about how can we extract the most from you, you know? So it's important to have that honest voice around, just to keep you in check and point things out to you when the lights are so bright that you get carried away with the moment, you know?
That's beautiful. Absolutely, yeah. Do you find touring an expression that is easy to fill, or do you find it a bit difficult?
Do you know, I find touring to be the best part. For me, I think that's I think that's the most honest exchange. You know, you get on stage, it's you, the microphone, the songs, the lyrics you wrote, and you give it out, and the transaction's immediate. The audience hears it, and they're giving you back something immediate as well. There's no middleman. There's no someone trying to make the most of the moment or anything like that. It's just a very honest. And for me, that's what music is about. You know, the writing and then the getting on the stage. All the bits in between is fine, but you know, the bits in between, you stumble across people who are aligned with you and people who aren't necessarily aligned with you but need to make the most of a situation, so, which is life, I guess.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. You have a contract in a way, an unwritten contract with people who buy your ticket. They come to your show, they want to hear the hits, they want to see you happy, they want to go away with a happy feeling. It's just the best thing.
Yeah, that is. And, you know, any time that I've wanted to stop, fortunately enough for me, I've always the live audience has always been supportive. So whenever I felt, you know, I want to step back a bit and just maybe this isn't for me anymore. When I do get on the stage and I get that transaction again, you come off and you really think, nah, do you know what? A few more years. I like that feeling. So.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
My name's Rohan. I'm based in Manchester right now, but I grew up in York. I was actually pursuing to be a pilot, and I was in the Air Cadets for 2 years. But then a bunch of friends and I were getting into electronic music, and my mum was showing me drum and bass. I was getting into Pendulum, Prodigy, and we went to go see Skrillex and this other artist called Flux Pavilion in Sheffield at the time. My mum drove us down, and it was quite like a big thing. And after that point, I said to mum, hey, this is actually what I'd like to do from here on out. And my mum's rule is give it a month. And if you feel the same way in a month, she'll honour it. Obviously, as long as it's not ridiculous. But in my opinion, that was quite a ridiculous move. But yeah, and she honoured it and she was really supportive. My mum has supported my brothers and I unbelievably well. And I'm forever grateful for what she's taught us. I then moved from York to Manchester to study in Manchester, and it just became an obsession, really. Like, I'm not talented in the slightest, I'm just obsessed. But it's taken me a good 6 years of just working day jobs, like cafes, and I have this mantra where it's like, it's the Holy Trinity. As long as you have an income, hobby and health, the creativity can usually flow outside of that. So the day job was I worked 3 days a week, 12-hour shifts in a cafe. The hobby was I climb, and the health was I just had to make sure I had food in my stomach and like a bed to sleep in. So as long as I have all of that, I could create music. But I spent the whole first year of the pandemic sat in my bedroom producing as much music as possible. And then in the second year, my manager, I picked him up at the start of the pandemic. He reached out to me and we scheduled a song every single month, which created a heck of a ton of momentum. And then off the back end, we then started to come out of the national lockdown here in the UK. We then applied for my US visa. I got a US agent, and within the first half of last year, I was then in the US playing this crazy festival called Hard Summer. And I was on the same stage as Megan Thee Stallion. At New Year's, I played to 7,000 people, which was just insane. Like, full production, I had a UFO behind me, dancers, I had robots. Like, it was insane. Alongside all these highs, and from the outside, it looks fantastic because I get to travel to these places I've always dreamed of, and I get paid while doing it. It's literally a dream job. And my new motto and kind of catchphrase that I'll be printing on merchandise when I do is it's a boy in a dream, because that is where I am. I'm just a boy in a dream. And some low moments, and I talk about this with my girlfriend quite a lot and she's really supportive, is a lot of it's to do with financial stress, because it's very hard to be creative and in a healthy mindset when you've got money stress. It's hard to kind of do anything. After this tour and all this great stuff that's been going on, I've been presented with this opportunity to do an EP for this record label called Vision. And I'm in a position where I'm like, I actually just can't create anything. It's been 4 months and I have one track that I'm happy with. So yeah, some of the darker times have been definitely revolving around financial stress. It's a lot of responsibility, quite a lot. And I'm still green on the scene, so I'm learning and yeah, doing my best. In terms of the support that Help Musicians have given me, it's actually a very important and pivotal bit of information about this sort of story that I've been painting here. So my journey, ever since I moved to Manchester, was so fixated and focused on getting a visa for a US tour, but I wasn't able to fund the full tour. I just didn't realise the vast amount of costs that came with it. Like, I'd only just bought myself a new laptop. The visa alone was like around $3,000 US dollars. plus the flights and everything, the accommodation, the food for all of this. And then my girlfriend, Ava, she showed me the funding from Help Musicians. I wasn't even aware that something like this existed. She helped me and we both put through the application. I put all the dates in and just explained what I would do with the funding. And there it was in my email that they accepted it and I got the full funding to help fund the tour. And it was the most insane feeling that this door that I've been piling towards for years with my head down was now open. And that was magnificent. So yeah, I strongly recommend looking into what Help Musicians do because it actually has changed the trajectory of my career. I'm very grateful for that.
Music Minds Matter from Help Musicians is available 24/7 to anyone who works in music. Call us for free to speak to an accredited counsellor who can offer you emotional support, advice and information. It doesn't have to be a crisis or even about music. If you work in music and are struggling to cope, then Music Minds Matter is here for you. Simply call 0808 802 8008 or visit musicmindsmatter.org.uk to receive support today.
Tell me, what was Fame Academy like? Was it fun?
Yeah, do you know what it was? At the time, it was just this mysterious thing. You know, I was talking to a mate about it, actually, one of the guys from Best Kept Secret that I was talking about, Terry. I was saying to him, you know, it's funny when you look back with your older hat on, there are a lot of things, you know, where at the time you're just going with this youthful gusto, you know, I can do this, anything's possible, this dream's possible. Later on, when you actually weigh up the odds of things lining up and the odds of things working out with your sensible hat on, you think, I would have never tried to do that because it's almost impossible for it to, you know, impossible for it to work. Same with, you know, even musicians. If you think about musicians, it's only like a very, 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 very small, I want to say it's like 1% or something like that of musicians in the world who get to actually make a living from what they do, as in this is their bread and butter for life, you know?
Yeah.
So with those odds, would you actually attempt to do it? Probably not, you know? But when you're young and you've got that gusto and that energy, you think, yeah, no, anything's possible. I'm different, you know? There's something special about this thing here. And I rolled the dice and I found myself in Fame Academy. It was a last-ditch attempt, you know? I was going to give up. I was just going to go back and I told my parents I was going to take a year off and do pharmacy. But, you know, 8 years later, my other mate had graduated and was now a doctor and came around the house. And my other guy was working for like Morgan Stanley or some big company and was making good money now. And I literally had about £3 to my name. And my parents were looking at me like, you fluffed it, mate. You fluffed it. So, yeah, Fame Academy was just like a last-ditch attempt. A last-ditch attempt to
thank God you did
to
it.
Try. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. It could have been different.
Yeah. What was it that inspired you to sort of walk away from Sony and start your own label? Was it the needing to have independence?
If I'm honest, no. We came to the end of the contract. You know, the deal with Sony was 5 albums, and I did all 5. They were successful. I did, you know, quite a few multi-platinum albums with them. And I think our time had run up. I think everything sometimes, not everything, but most things run their course, good or bad. You know, they say this too shall pass. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the right time to move on. They didn't decide to renew the contract. I was in a very positive place and that the profile was high. The public reception and feeling was good. And I thought, you know what, maybe now's a good time to start learning about the other side and how to do it yourself and, you know, put together certain budgets and that to actually have a go at it. So I took a bit of a break at first because, like I say, 5 years of it, album after album, I did get a little bit burnt out. And then after that, I thought, you know what, let me do a bit more writing. So I went to LA. I was doing a lot of writing out there with the different top kind of like producers and writers. And then I put together a fund with, you know, I found the right connections and put together a fund and released one album, which was good. But I think everything's a learning process. So as much as it sounds good, like, oh yeah, I've got my own label. If you don't know how to run it or you don't know the key elements that you need to put in place or you don't plan far enough ahead, you can get unstuck. You know, the benefit that big labels have is their budget is enormous, you know, so something's not going right, they can spend some more and change something, or spend some more and pull that in. As an independent, you don't really have that luxury. So you need to plan that much further ahead and be that much more savvy and that much more hustle-worthy in your mind to get the timeline correct, you know? So I'd say that on that first album, I think the product was right. Maybe I didn't know the full process enough, but, you know, it turned out to be a productive overall project. But this time around, obviously, I can think a little bit further ahead and be a bit more frugal with things.
How difficult was it to find the funding? I'm kind of looking in that direction myself. It's quite tricky, I think.
Yeah, do you know, at the time I stumbled across a guy. What is his name? Andrew. I've forgotten his surname. Andrew, anyway. So I was phoning around. I was looking. There was a few different funds that were coming up around music around that time. A few different people that were looking to invest. But I think the key thing is, sometimes it's harder to find investment if you don't already have a catalog. It's kind of like the chicken and the egg, which is like a lot of things in music. Somebody wants to sign you, but at the same time, they want you to already have this huge fan base. So you've got to kind of do the work and get the fan base, but then it might get to the point where you don't actually need the deal because you've got the fan base, so you can go direct to the fans.
Yeah.
It's the kind of a conundrum. So yeah, so they were looking for to invest in artists, but artists with catalog. So obviously, I had a bit of a catalog. My catalog, though, was still with Sony, so the deal couldn't really work in that way, but they were still able to roll the dice on me because I was so fresh out of my deal with Sony. It was probably a year or two afterwards. So they thought, you know, it's still worth taking a gamble and seeing whether we can make back our money. Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, the industry for all of us has changed so much since we first picked up an instrument or started singing or writing lyrics.
Hugely.
With Spotify, YouTube and all these things. It's kind of, it is much harder work now than it was certainly when I was a teenager. I just threw myself into it. I didn't have to think. I had a manager, I had a record label. I didn't have to do any of the social media stuff.
Yeah. And do you know what? I think what you said there, that is so key. A lot of people ask me, they say, oh, do you know, isn't it great now that there's so much access for new artists. You can just, you know, put your stuff out there. And I'm like, you know, the problem is it becomes like the A&R man's table back in the day where you send in a cassette, you know, it's got cassettes up to here. Which one is he going to listen to? There's so many, you know, the great one might be the 27th one down on the right, but has he got time to look for all of that? Probably not, you know? So, and I think I think that's how like YouTube and a lot of platforms now are getting. It's great that you can just do something in your room and just put it up immediately. Bang, everyone can hear it. But to stand out on that table and say, I'm number 27, pick me, you know, listen here and you'll like it. It's hard. It's hard, you know?
But it is, but I guess you've got your core fans that you can reach out to. I guess you know how to reach them.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. So for me, it's different because I've been fortunate enough to have a bit of a back catalogue. So, you know, I could say, okay, if there's any Justice or Dance of Your
Feet,
I can remind people and then they can say, oh, actually, I remember that song. I'll check out his new thing. Whereas if you're a new artist now, ooh, you got to be good or you got to be making a lot of noise to be heard.
Got to be different.
Yeah, different. Just stand out in some way.
Yeah, it's like I run songwriting workshops and a guy called Youngblood came down to write some songs and he was different and he certainly is. He's just played Wembley just with social media. It's blown my mind.
That is brilliant. Now that is brilliant. And I think that's the key. It's like if you're able to not look at the bright lights and just say, okay, I've got two fans right now. I'm going to make these fans feel amazingly special and I'm going to serve them well. Those two will become four and those four will become 10 and 10 will become 20. But always make sure that what you're giving them is your best, you know? And then eventually it will grow. But I think sometimes people can get discouraged in this day of likes and follows and, you know, how many people follow you. They can get lost in those metrics and forget that there is someone there though who is liking your stuff. It's one person. But if you keep giving that one person is going to tell someone. And as long as you're putting out that good value and that good quality, you're putting your best foot forward, it will grow to whatever it's going to grow to. But it might be slower. It might not be as fancy as 7,000 likes in 1 hour. And it might not be that. But it can get there. You know, like you said, Youngblood, Wembley, I'm sure it didn't just happen overnight.
Yeah, I'm doing like 15 months, so it's pretty quick anyway.
Still quick, yeah, still very quick. But
there's a couple of people that I know like him that they talk to their audience in a sort of therapeutic way. They say to them, look, if you're gay, if you're this, that, the other, you're welcome to my show.
Yeah.
If you don't get on with your parents, fuck them, sort of thing.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like you're really getting to know your audience. How well do you know yours?
I'd like to say that I do. I think the artist nowadays probably knows their audience even better. And I say that because when I was growing up, it was better for the artist to be a mystery, you know? So like, I don't know, David Bowie or, you know, Michael Jackson, you know, this, you know, does he sleep in a chamber or does he, you know, you, all that stuff, you wouldn't, it was almost, that was the accepted thing. Like, oh yeah. And then you see them and they're like from this other world, you know? Whereas now, it's true, but now, you know, they want this, they want you now, they want to know that you relate to them, that you go through the same things, that you go to the toilet, you eat breakfast, they want that kind of closeness. And I'm a super private person, so that transition is a hard one, but for a young person coming through now who's just born into it, like, oh, I'm at the shop now and showing that they're at the shop and they're at the, all that, they get a deeper connection with their audience because their audience really does feel like they're on the, exactly the same journey with them. They saw them yesterday and that evening, and it builds a different type of relationship, yeah. I guess. Yeah,
yeah, it's very true, actually. You know, when I was growing, yes, a really good point. When I was growing up, the mystery behind people on stage was incredible. You never knew where they were, and you thought they were in private jets and they had gold. But now, like that, the fourth wall has come down.
That's it, the fourth
and
wall.
You kind of know that we all.
That's
we,
it.
They all know that we need therapy. They all know that we need help.
Yeah, it's true.
The mystery is gone.
Yeah. Even back in the day, you know, they'd want you to, you know, don't talk about your life. Don't talk about this. Don't talk about that. Because, it, you know, then, the, like you say, the curtain will fall and the fourth wall will be broken and they'll know that you're just a human. Whereas now, that's the strength. You know, you are a human and you're going through stuff and they want to support you as well, and because they're going through stuff as well and they feel more that they can relate to you, you know. It's still a hard thing for me to do. I won't lie. It's very, very hard. I feel like, you know, if my life's boring, so like, unless I'm actually doing something on a promotional trail, why would someone want to hear from me? But they do, so I'm slowly trying to claw at it, but it's a hard one.
I read that you suffered from tinnitus for a while. What was that like for you?
Oh yeah, I still do. Yeah, it's not curable, so it will be there forever. I just remember going to bed one night, you know, the missus was asleep, the house was quiet, and I was like, what is that sound? I was looking for where the sound was coming from. I couldn't find it. Turn off the TV. I was like, what's going on? So, you know, woke up the missus. I was like, can you hear that sound? She was like, silent to me. And then I started looking things up. I thought, I can definitely hear something. So I looked it up and then I realized I had tinnitus. And then you go through the period of feeling kind of shell-shocked a bit because you're thinking, well, I will not ever hear silence now unless some invention is made. I don't know. But luckily enough for me, the sound that I hear isn't too intrusive. It's just a very, very, very high-pitched sound. So in normal circumstances, like now I've started thinking about it. For instance, I can hear it again right now. But you know, in general, in the daytime, I can't really hear it. But in the night, I probably sleep with the TV on or headphones in and listen to a podcast or listen to something so that I'm distracted from the other sound. Yeah.
Yeah, I share that with you.
Okay.
It is a high pitched kind of annoyance, almost like you've left a radio on somewhere.
There we go.
You can't turn it off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Pete Townsend had that or has that. And, he got therapy for it somehow, and he wears in-ears on stage that have noise cancelling, and they take that pitch out. I don't know if you have that.
No, I've never even heard about that. So you can cancel the noise out. Maybe I'll hear silence for real. Wow.
Yeah, but you have to wear the headphones, obviously, but it's or the earphones, but it gets the pitch and then tunes it out, you know, like you're EQing it. Sort
Yeah. I've got to look into that. That sounds great.
Yeah, it's a place in Harley Street that does it, I think. But I'm sure Pete's manager will help you. His name's Bill Kerbishley.
Yeah. I've got to look into that, definitely. Wow. I've got a bit of a solution, maybe.
Possibly. So have you got dates coming up in the summer?
I wanted to test the waters first. It's been a while. So I wanted to test the waters first and see whether someone would come out. So April the 27th and April the 28th, I've got in Manchester on April the 27th, O2 Ritz, I'm going to be performing there. And then Indigo at the O2 in London, April the 28th. That one's selling really, really, really well. So hopefully a full house, and hopefully I'll get on stage and and with the band, and people will like it and I'll like it as much. And then, yeah, hopefully some more dates later on in the year. So it's looking positive.
How many in the band?
Oh, in the band. Oh my God, I have to count my fingers. Like, I want to say like, what, 1, 2, drums, keys, bass, guitar, percussion, vocals, sometimes another vocals. What's that, 8? 8 or 9, something like that.
That's a lot of PDs.
You're talking like a businessman now, Chris. That's a lot of PDs, huh? A lot of hotel rooms, that is.
Get them to share.
Yeah, yeah.
Is music healing for you? Can you sit and listen to a record and it's good for your healing soul? And I only say that because I know that when I find myself in a slightly dark place and I try and find my way out, I have to listen to something that correlates with that frequency.
Yeah.
Relaxes me and changes my mood. What music would that be for you?
Oh, wow. What music would that be for me? Do you know what? For me, my therapy, if I'm honest, it's not solely the music, it's the writing. So, yeah, I find that if I'm going through, like, for instance, I went through a bit of a downer. I think every artist does, you know, especially when, you know, if you've been doing it long enough. Obviously, there's the high period of my Sony times, which was great. Obviously, then us parting ways, which was a bit of a downer, but things were still on the up. Then I did my own label, which was great, but then you also realize all the effort and the hard work that comes with that. Then I went to America for a bit and tried to make some ventures over there, which went well, but ultimately I chose to base myself over here still. You know, then there's family stuff, and then there's my mom, there's my dad. And through all that, like I say, the fans are always like, you know, when's new music? When's new music? When's new music? And I'm a super, super private person. So it's very hard for me to express or let people really know the intricacies of how hard things can get. So, you know, one song on my new album called I Been was me trying to address that. And one of those tracks that I said that Matthias had sent over that I'd been listening to. But again, I felt a bit despondent with writing. And I think because I got to a place where I didn't feel like picking up the pen and writing, then I started bottling a lot of stuff inside. So then there's no real outlet. Yeah. But that one track, for some reason, it's kind of like a dark, kind of like violin-y kind of track. I remember it was like 1 or 2 in the morning. And then I went into the studio and was able to let out in a kind of more of a poetic way the answer to those questions, you know, where have I been? What have I felt? You know, the splitting up with my previous manager, my prior manager as well, which is all amicable. But, you know, obviously there's always a little bit of something in you, which is, what is it, unhappy about. So me being able to address that, me being able to address any time that I felt treated untowardly or unequally in music, or, you know, all those words came out in a way that was still kind of covered in a shroud, but for me, let it out. You know, tears came out then as well, you know, a lot. And then I was able to put the pen down. And after that, I felt very, 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 very positive. But, you know, for me, writing lyrics and melody is my way more so than just listening to music. Yeah.
So there isn't anybody in particular that you would put a record on, like a Joni Mitchell record, and it would take you somewhere?
Oh, loads. I mean, there's loads. I love from Joni to, oh, who did that? She just came to my... Sorry, is it Joni that was... Well, I'm not going to say involved, but involved with Larry Klein. It was Joni, right?
Yeah, yeah. He produced her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So because we did River. I did River with him, and he was telling me about it. So, yeah. But it's because I'm saying Joni, but I'm thinking of the artist I'm talking about. Who's Fast Cars. Tracy Chapman.
Tracy Chapman.
Wow. That's wow. I like Tracy. Do you know what? I like Al Green. I like Marvin Gaye, obviously. Sam Cooke takes me there. Aliza Adams. I love her voice as well. You know, that whole Get Here If You Can. I love that track. So, yeah, depending on what I'm feeling or what the message is, different songs pop
in
to
that
mind.
Moment. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Lamar, for being so honest and open with me today. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Chris.
And I'd also like to invite you, if you're around in June, I run a songwriting camp at Glastonbury just before the festival.
Oh.
June the 11th. Writers come from Nashville, Los Angeles, Austin, Texas, all over the place.
Wow.
We're in a big, comfortable house. It's all paid for. You don't have to pay for anything. You just turn up. And we write for a week, and then the best songs get performed at the festival. So I just thought I'd throw that out there.
That is brilliant.
You'd be more than welcome to join us. It's beautiful. It sleeps up to 21 people, and it's like a 5-minute walk from the pyramid stage.
Oh, look at that.
So it's a pretty cool place to be.
That is brilliant.
Yeah.
What a great thing to do. That's brilliant. Definitely, definitely. You know, on that note, what is it? I did a masterclass recently, a singing and songwriting masterclass, which I filmed it with a company, which is going to come out at some point, which I've been talking about on my website. But, you know, that singing and songwriting and all that stuff, I love it. Even if sometimes it's not even just about trying to release something, but just being around that energy and being around, especially new energy, that just writing stuff is a beautiful thing.
Thanks for your time.
All right.
God bless you, man.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
What a nice man he is, who seems to have had his life put back together again. He's got it all in balance, it seems, and it's great to welcome him back after all this time away. I really hope his new album is a huge success for him. And I also hope he can get to sort out his tinnitus. Perhaps Pete Townshend is on the phone to him as we speak. As always, thank you for listening and please subscribe to this podcast. Supporting Help Musicians in any way at all helps the musicians who bring so much to our lives. To find out more about Help Musicians, you can find them on all social media channels. Keep coming back. I Never Thought It Would Happen is a Gimme Sugar production for Help Musicians.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.